Good evening and welcome to the June 19th, 2007 meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees. The board met in closed session to discuss the public employee performance, the superintendent's evaluation, and that was completed. We also did personnel item number B, negotiations with unrepresented employees, assistant superintendent of business services, assistant superintendent educational services, and the superintendent. And then we discussed personnel item status of unrepresented employees, the accompanists. Is there a consensus on the order of business? Okay. Let's move forward then to an approval of the minutes. Do we have a motion to approve the minutes of June 5th?
I make a motion to approve the minutes of June 5th.
I'll second.
Okay. It's been moved by Mr. Spadafore, seconded by Mr. Peter. Discussion?
Well, just correction of a... Can you hear me? Of a typographical error. Under item 26, proposal to provide autism services within district classes, it reads Dr. Valentine, Mr. Millar, and Mrs. Kirk-Martinez explained. It should read Dr. Valentine, Mr. Miller, and Mrs. Kirk-Martinez.
Again.
Okay. Do you accept, and so we have an amendment to that? Taking it that's okay with everybody?
Yeah.
All right. Okay, the motion's been amended and the amendment's been accepted. Any other discussion? All in favor? Aye. Carries 6-0. Let's move on then to a presentation, the ROP Teacher of the Year.
One of their ROP teachers for ROP Teacher of the Year. This first year produced extremely qualified candidates. In this district, we nominated two teachers. From Morro Bay High School, Liz Moore was nominated. She teaches web design, electronic media, photography, and drawing. From San Luis Obispo High School, Sue Waterbury was nominated. She teaches the Careers with Children program and teaching careers. I am pleased to let you know that the two teachers from our district that were nominated were among the top three finalists in the competition. As the district ROP coordinator, and on behalf of Jim Souza, who could not be here tonight, it is my pleasure to introduce to you the Santa Lucia ROP Teacher of the Year, and that is Sue Waterbury. After earning her Bachelor's of Science degree and Standard Secondary Credential at Cal Poly in Home Economics, teaching preschool, and serving as a parent cooperative co-op president, Sue started teaching Careers with Children at San Luis Obispo High School in 1980. The Tiny Tiger Preschool is run by the high school students from this program. Few know the name Careers with Children, but many know the name Tiny Tiger Preschool or Tiny Tigers. The program opened in 1980 under Sue's direction. She was involved in designing the room. She was involved in setting the curriculum. She is the Tiny Tiger program at San Luis High. Since 1990, she initiated and successfully completed the process of licensing the preschool with the Department of Social Services. Tiny Tiger Preschool serves 48 preschoolers from the community and is the only licensed on-campus high school program. Sue even has done workshops at the state at state conferences to teach others how to license on-campus preschools. Careers with Children is an articulated course with Cuesta College. This year, 39 high school students were eligible to receive 3 semester units of Cuesta credit. Students from the Careers with Children program have gone on to become elementary and secondary teachers, preschool directors, firefighters, physical education specialists, pediatric nurses, family daycare providers, health educators, counselors, and on and on and on. There is nobody more dedicated to education programs, to certify programs, and again, on and on and on and on. Sue is dedicated to the education of all children, and one way she demonstrates this is through integrating preschoolers and high schoolers with special needs. This year alone, her program has included preschool children that are visually impaired, deaf, autistic, limited in mobility, German speakers, and Spanish speakers. Her high school students come from San Luis Obispo High School, from the county special education program, from Pacific Beach High School, and from Templeton Independent Study Program. She gives to the community and works to instill the importance of giving to the community into her students. She facilitates and coordinates community field site opportunities at elementary schools, at preschools, and in family daycare homes for her students. She recruits and coordinates cabin leaders for local elementary schools, for sixth grade resident camps at Lake Conchuma and at Fish Camp in Yosemite. She provides a variety of volunteers and volunteer opportunities for her students at local school carnivals and community events, such as the birth and baby fair at Mission Plaza. Sue herself is a founding member of the San Luis Distance Club, which has been in existence over 30 years, and serves as a Sunday school teacher and child care attendant for her church. Sue is a teacher, mentor, counselor of many, of preschoolers, high schoolers, preschool parents, high school parents, colleagues, and friends. At every age, once you enter her classroom door, you walk out a changed person. In the words of one of her students, "I walked in to look up and see a lady with a friendly smile." She helps her high school students understand what it is like to be responsible, independent, and caring adults. She knows how to make the atmosphere fun while still being serious at the same time. I have said to myself that I want to grow up and have a job like hers. I want to be like her. I wish my other teachers bothered to take the time to connect to their students the way she does. I look up to her. She is a role model in my eyes. Congratulations, Sue.
Said something that was very consistent with what you had just said, Karen, is that she loved going to the class because of the energy you'd put into it, but it also taught her something that was very important. She felt, and that was the responsibility and the seriousness of being with children. Then she went over to C.L. Smith and did a program over there that you helped establish. And she said she had a lot of friends that didn't realize that component of being with children, the responsibility, and it was a very important thing for a teenager to begin understanding at an early age when they still had choices to make. So she always talked so highly of your class and loved it, too.
Thank you.
And just on behalf of the Board of Education, I want to congratulate you and thank you for all the years of service to the youth of San Luis Obispo.
All right. Thank you.
Let's move on then to public comment. We have one request to speak. Tom Guernsey.
Good evening, Mr. President and board members. My name is Tom Guernsey. I'm a longtime resident of Avila Beach. Been asked by members of the community to come and speak on behalf of the plight of the Avila Beach Schoolhouse. It's a majority view of the residents of Avila Beach that they do not want to have the schoolhouse property used as a condominium project. Also, they would like to see, a majority of the people would like to see the schoolhouse used as a educational facility as well as a cultural educational facility. And I can't stress how sensitive this issue is throughout the community. We would like this board, if there is any way possible, to discontinue the current project as it is. And I'm open for any questions if anybody has any questions.
Thank you, but the board can't ask you questions at this time.
Okay.
We don't engage in, we're not allowed, we really are not allowed to engage in open forums with people during public comment. It, would be considered possibly a violation of the Brown Act because it's not on the agenda to discuss this item.
Okay.
If board members have an interest in pursuing it, we would do that later through the advanced agenda items.
So, very well.
Great.
Well, thank you for hearing me out
and hearing
the community.
Great. Thank you for coming.
Theater and conservationist for 18 years. I've worked at several oil spills in California, caring for oil wildlife. Over the years, this is real intimidating, sorry. Over the years, I have completed numerous wildlife courses, including a course in gross necropsy. During my elementary, junior, and high school education, dissection was never included in any of my science classes. I managed to take care of it as I was older when I needed it. I am extremely concerned about the negative effects associated with dissecting animals. I question the purpose and validity of this choice of curriculum. Transparency and communication is paramount. The entire process pertaining to the acquisition of the animal from the beginning to the end must be taught as part of the course. Everyone should be aware that the animals may have been companion animals. This is the reason we have the Animal Welfare Act that is law today. With few USDA inspectors available, and the huge territories that they must cover, we would be naive to believe that all dissection animals are legally obtained. In California, there are no big shelters that will donate euthanized animals to dealers who are licensed to sell animals for dissection. According to the Humane Society of the U.S., animals suffer during capture, handling, transport, and killing for dissection. Recent documented examples include cats purchased on the streets in Mexico, killed by drowning, or having their throats slit and then shipped to the U.S. for distribution. Live frogs piled in cloth bags for days or weeks. This is the Humane Society that has documented these things. Bullfrogs dying and rotting in transport containers. Warehoused turtles crowded in filthy holding tanks. Bacterial infections rampant. Many dying. Cats prodded roughly into crowded gas chambers. Dissection prior to the college level is a violent, unnecessary act which devalues the lives of other creatures to the level of expendable creatures or items. It desensitizes students. It's impossible to condone killing an animal for the sake of a science class at that level, at the same time still believe that life is sacred. What message are we sending to the students? I would like to see animal dissection discontinued for all grades through high school. Life science education should be all about teaching respect for life. And I have, we have a few copies of different, couple of different things to give you. One of them is a dissection versus alternatives, a cost comparison that was done by the Humane Society, showing a savings of between $2,700 and, am I 3 minutes over?
Ilsa, she'll make sure that we go ahead and get those. Is there somebody else that would like to speak? Okay. Yeah, you can bring that down. There you go.
All right. Okay. Hi, my name is Ivy Alvarado. I'm a student at SLO High, and I'd like to thank you for letting me speak tonight. I would like to begin with discussing my experiences with animal dissection. Last year, I was in the biology class, and as one of our in-class projects, we dissected a frog. And even though I was completely grossed out and disgusted by the whole thought of cutting open a once-living animal, I decided that I would suck it up, basically, and give it a try. I'd like to point out that I only did that because of my immense respect for my teacher, Mrs. McCartney. But as Ms. McCartney was standing in front of the class explaining what was going to go on that day, I found myself fighting back tears. I ended up waiting after she was done speaking and went to get the frogs, and I went up to speak to her about maybe a different assignment. I told her that I thought I might be able to handle it, but I just couldn't. And she assigned me a research essay. I was to write about the pros and cons of dissection, which I completed. After Memorial Weekend, I came to school and found a bunch of kids and teachers and crowded around a tree. My friend and I walked up to see what everyone was staring at, and we saw a poster of Happy Feet, the movie, and what we later realized was a dead cat. And I didn't speak about it until fourth period because I just couldn't talk about it. All day I was wondering if the cat was from, was a house cat. I thought that they had gone and collected, I don't know. And during fourth period, I learned that it was from the anatomy class. These are my two main experiences with dissection. I will never forget them. In fact, I was at Best Buy the other day, and I was looking for a movie for my dad, and I saw the Happy Feet movie, and I started shaking, and they leave high school. When I read something like this, it makes me wonder if dissections... Okay. All right. It just makes me wonder if dissection is really necessary. And, yeah, the rest of what I wrote is in the little packets. Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you very much. We appreciate your coming out. And we always appreciate hearing from students. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Is there anyone else who would like to address the board during public comment? Okay. Mr. Bedrigian.
Good evening. Bruce Bedrigian, President, San Luis Coastal Teachers Association. Just wanted to report to the board that we are right now following our bylaws and going through the Hawthorne request for a waiver for collaboration. We're going to be meeting tomorrow with the contract waiver request committee, and as soon as I find the results from that, I'll contact Dr. Valentine. And we were wondering if at the next board meeting we could agendize that item so that we could report the results back to the board on how that went with the waiver.
And again, Bruce, we'll bring that up during advanced agenda items.
Great. Thank
you. The board has an interest in agendizing it, or otherwise we can talk about other ways that you can report that out to the board. But I do want to wait until advanced agenda items.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who wishes to address the board at this time? Okay. Seeing no one, let's move on to item number one, which is reports by school staff. Are there any school staff that would like to make reports at this time? Okay. Then let's move on to item number two, status of the state budget. Mr. Miller.
Thank you. Just a couple of quick things. The roller coaster ride of the state's revenues continues as the most recent report is that the state is... had a better than they thought May, still wasn't all that great, but instead of being three quarters of $1 billion short of their estimate from January, they're only $500 million short. So the roller coaster goes up and it goes down, and now it's back up again. So we'll see where it all ends. But they're having a very difficult time trying to cobble together a revenue forecast, which will, you know, based on ADA. And previous to that, it had been allocated to district-wide policy implementation, not site-based. And so there was a lot of confusion and upset. Well, they've reached a compromise of sorts about it, and the committee has passed the bill. And basically what it does is it provides that the money should be allocated to the sites, except in the cases where the board is willing to pass a resolution at a public meeting specifying how the funds are to be allocated among school sites and for district-wide purposes and the reasons for those allocations. It has a couple of conditions, like prior to the board meeting, you have to notify the public that this will be discussed. There has to be ample opportunity for public comment and other things. But essentially, the work that we put into putting together what really is a site-based program, but it's from a district-wide interest base, has the condition that the board will have to pass a resolution. So I bring that to your attention as a change in what has been a very high-profile and interesting discussion about how to spend these funds. And sometime prior to the school year, we'll be bringing you that resolution.
I was just going to ask, that seems to be consistent with Mr. Buckman's request and comment last meeting that the board determine the issues regarding integrated sequential visual performing arts district-wide. So it's coming back, and I think that showed a bit of foresight then, because that sounds like what they're asking that that be done, that the board be apprised by the administration of what a program may look like, and then the board has to vote.
That would be part of the resolution, yes. That concludes my report.
Okay. Let's move on then to item number 3, which is the annual review of peer assistance and review the PAR program. Mr. Robinette and Mr. Quisenberry.
Thank you. And I have a short report to read to you, but I do want to note that Jim Quisenberry, who is also a member of the PAR Joint Committee, is here to answer any questions that the board may have. This is part of an annual report. About 8 years ago, the legislature approved a program and allocated funds for peer assistance and review. The primary purpose of the peer assistance and review program is to assist permanent teachers who have unsatisfactory evaluation in one or more areas related to teaching strategies, subject matter competence, and/or classroom organization. In Education Code, the school principal and the consulting teacher participating teacher relationship utilizing PAR funds run on a parallel track toward improvement. And funds are used to support time together in services or workshops or to make observations of other classrooms in the areas identified in the evaluation. The consulting teacher works independently of the principal, and there is ideally a trusted, confidential relationship between the consulting teacher and the participating teacher. The principal and the PAR support provider each have access to the concerns raised in evaluations, but then work independently toward ostensibly the same goals, which is improvement in practice. At the end of the year, and periodically as necessary, there is a decision made by the evaluator, the principal, as to whether or not the performance is satisfactory or not. And at the same time, the PAR consulting teacher will reach conclusions about whether or not this type of support should continue. And this is overseen by a joint committee that is made up of 2 district administrators and 3 San Luis Coastal Teachers Association representatives as part of our joint agreement. And this year, myself, Damian Barnett, Jim Quisenberry, and Guy Crabb served on that committee. Over the course of the year, we had 1 teacher on a remediation plan receiving PAR support services. The end result was a satisfactory evaluation and the sense that true remediation took place. It is the belief of the PAR Joint Committee that this extra level of support is valuable and does yield the type of results that we're seeking. It is the Joint Committee's belief that some of the focus of the coming year should be for teacher support that might not be tied to unsatisfactory evaluations, because truthfully, we don't have that many, but rather for the type of support necessary for teachers who may be needing assistance in classroom management, instructional techniques, or subject matter competence, but haven't been given a poor evaluation. We know that we have people who may be facing new subjects, new challenges, or even a little bit of burnout and can use the extra help. And the Joint Committee would be responsible for allocating resources for the type of support for the overriding purpose of supporting teachers with the challenges that the profession brings. As a joint committee of the district administration and the San Luis Coastal Teachers Association, I know Jim joins me in feeling that PAR provides an excellent means for our district to work together to improve and maintain high quality in the classrooms, and we're available for any questions you might have.
Okay, Mrs. Roger.
Rick, I'm wondering, in the case of a teacher who had not received an unsatisfactory evaluation but who wanted to avail themselves of that program, how would they go about self-referring to it?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing available to provide support, and I think it's largely about getting the word out not only to our principals but to our association members so they know that that's available. And Jim, yeah.
And the funding of that has changed dramatically. Initially, there was quite a bit of money there, and we actually had the committee, you know, pick certain priorities, and one was in technology and so forth, and we were trying to help teachers, you know, implement technology in the classroom. So when the funding was reduced dramatically, then the program sort of lost its momentum. So we're just kind of looking at the possibility that with the funds that perhaps may be available, we can help out in some small way, deal with some of the things that Mr. Robinette referred to.
And thank you, Jim.
Isn't the PAR and committee and the PAR notion took the place of the mentor teachers, as I recall?
It did.
Yeah. Mr. Peter?
Where does the funding come from? Does it come from the general fund or from our fund or SLCTA as well? Is there a split of some sort?
No, it's a separate fund. It's a separate budget category, and actually the projection is healthy for I think in our LEA plan it was like $35,000 for the coming year. So it's not an insubstantial amount, and I think there can be, especially in the future, it seems to be a higher priority, some good that we can do with that.
Thank you. In the case where it isn't a self-referring teacher, how would a teacher be selected to participate in this who has not had an unsatisfactory evaluation, and is that selection itself going to be considered job action? Or, I mean, I know this is a little premature, but I mean, I do see some difficulties in going to a teacher who's had a satisfactory evaluation and saying, "I think you need to."
Yeah, and I believe it's reflected in our actual bylaws. That would truly be a voluntary situation, whereas the unsatisfactory evaluation, it starts the PAR process, and it's mandated that there's going to be this assistance provided. But in the case of somebody who isn't given an unsatisfactory in some area, it would be a voluntary process.
Jim and Rick, you too. Is it your sense that there's a need out there, and that
we pick some areas and we open it up to teachers, and we created a category of consulting teacher, which was not to help someone remediate problems they were having in their classroom, but to enhance what they were doing in the classroom. So I don't. And we can certainly, we have all the history of that, we can certainly do that again.
Yeah, I think it's important. I think the intent of PAR funds, and I think our intent is to help those that are struggling. And we know that people struggle maybe periodically, especially getting a new subject area, a new grade level, those kinds of things. And so it's kind of focused on subject area competence, classroom management, teaching techniques, as opposed to a professional development type of pot of money, but the Joint Committee has a lot of authority in how that's used, and knowing that our highest priority is towards teachers who have received an unsatisfactory evaluation and providing the support that is mandated for them to have.
Rick and Jim, question. What's not clear to me is if you have an unsatisfactory evaluation, that becomes part of your personnel jacket. How clear is it to teachers who may want to come towards this before it comes toward them in terms of being self-referred? I mean, how clear is it for teachers who may become aware that they could step forward and say, I could use some assistance in this regard? What's available for that person who may not have to have something in their personnel jacket but ask that they could get some assistance in these areas? Does that make do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that, and again, I think that's probably a communication piece with the district as a whole, because, when principals are doing observations and doing their, first and second round observations prior to a formal evaluation, they might identify some things that say, hey, we're leaning towards, an unsatisfactory in this area. If by the end of the year, or by the time a formal evaluation comes about, we're looking for some change. That might be the very thing that should trigger the PAR committee to get involved, if that teacher is willing to be involved. But I think that's work, wouldn't you agree, that we would need to do as far as the communication about that.
So would that be an outreach to both the site administrator and the teachers?
And the teacher.
To say, before you get to a formal evaluation where it's in writing and part of a permanent record, I would recommend, because this is becoming available, that you avail yourself of.
Thank you.
Budget. The PAR money is state money, is that right?
Yes.
And it fluctuates.
Tremendously.
Every year. And do we, as a district, make any contributions to PAR-like programs ourselves?
The only thing that we make contributions to, and it's not... It's important probably to have a distinction, is something called BITSA, beginning teacher support. At a point in time, they were very closely related, and we actually used that same committee to work on that. But the teacher induction part, which is not about remediation. It's about supporting our new teachers coming into the district that have to clear their credentials specifically, but are in their first or second year of teaching. That's another pot of money that is kind of devoted towards mentoring, but it's they really are separate entities. Thank you.
Okay, let's move on then to item number 4, approval to pay board members' salary for permissible absence or alternate meeting. Dr. Valentine?
This is a routine item that comes forward when a board member misses a board meeting for a reason that is compensatable, doing board business, illness, that type of thing.
And I would announce that this is about me. It was for my attendance at CSBA, and so I will abstain from this item.
I make a motion to grant this or whatever needs to be done.
It's been moved by Mr. Spadafor and seconded by Mr. Buckman.
And I'd just like to thank you for the extra work you do with the CSBA delegate and the work you do.
Thank you. Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Okay, carries 5 ayes, 1 abstention. Let's move on then to item number 5, approval of updated local educational agency LEA plan with addendum. Dr. Matakovich.
Yes, thank you, President Unger. Annually, we come before you with our local educational agency plan. This has been updated to reflect our current objectives that we have district-wide. By meeting this requirement, we're able to accept federal and state funding, and as I say, we're required to present this to you for your review and approval. As you can see, it's a multi-year plan that engages all aspects.
Addressing, you know, our resources toward what's in the strategic plan and the subgroups that we're targeting. There's so much here that I think it would be valuable to actually go through this document or have a discussion about this document, perhaps at a study session at some point in the future. I'm not saying that that means we should delay approval of the report, but I just found it really valuable to read, and I would love to have more time to go through it in a more structured fashion. I don't know how the other board members feel, but I thought it was very well done.
I'm going to go to Dr. Valentine first, and then Mark.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Mark?
Thank you, Dr. Valentine. I agree with Dave. I spent a fair amount of time going through this and ran out of a whole package of sticky pads, and I would rather not do that here because I know that this needs to probably go forward fairly quickly. Mm-hmm. I did have just one question, if I might. I'm always under the impression that because of where we live and because of the quality of the district that we don't have trouble hiring teachers. And I was surprised, it's on page 27, I was surprised to see under the ELD SDI teachers that were short. And I didn't know whether that was a budget consideration or whether that was a problem in hiring.
Well, actually, Mr. Buckman, people whom we hire now come with the certification. It's our teachers that are already with us who we look toward certifying in this area. We've made a commitment annually to accept each site's plan toward certification, and we cover the training for teachers identified at each grade level to be certified in this area. The difficulty is we have tenured teachers who are employed, and this is an additional area for them to develop. So it's a challenge that we face as we address the needs of our English learners who need to be placed with qualified teachers who have this certification.
I'd just like to comment that this whole document, or most of this document, to me, is about No Child Left Behind. And what it does is it really presents a snapshot of what the district is doing, and I think in many ways provides a roadmap for the district and things that we have expectations that, and we and the federal and state governments have expectations that we will meet. This is, from my perspective, in a way, to hear more about the process for academic supports the formative assessment for English language learners? How do we get there? Because I think we're talking about developing that. Mm-hmm. What do we mean by a data-driven analysis for staff development? So those are just some things that jumped out at me. And I don't know if we can go ahead and do this at this point, Dr. Valentine. I know there's interest from at least three of us for pursuing this as a study session. If we go forward at this point or if we want to wait until advanced agenda items to express that and then develop the questions that we would want to have answered at a later time.
I think we understand the board.
I think we understand the board's direction. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The microphone is something else.
Shall we bring it back then at advanced agenda? We're cool with this right now? Okay. It looks like we have at least three or four members who would support that more in-depth discussion. I'm seeing five members, Mr. Millar, six members. Okay, so let's bring this back then and work the details on it on how we'd like to see this come back to the board as a study session. And is this an action item for this evening?
Requesting approval.
Would somebody like to make a motion?
Yeah, I'll move approval, of the updated local educational agency plan with addendum.
Second.
Okay. It's been moved by Mrs. Roger and seconded by Mr. Spadafore that we approve item number 5, the updated local education agency plan with addendum. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
It carries 6-0. Let's move on to item number 6, also another fairly interesting item, approval of consolidated application for funding categorical aid programs, part one. Dr. Matakovich.
Yes, part one lays out for you our funding sources as well as assures you that we are meeting our legal compliance issues. What you have in front of you is a summary on page 6.2 and 6.3 of all of our funding sources and with an estimated allocation based on this year's allocation. And we have this application presented to you to guarantee to you that we are providing these programs and they may meet the federal and state regulations. So we ask that you consider this application and approve it tonight so we can accept these funds.
Mr. Buckman?
Again, several questions, but one pressing, if it's okay, Chairman. Two-part question. When we talk about the poverty rate, can you define that? What is it? Is it based just on the free and reduced lunch? Do we know a family income? I'm on page,
yes.
Part one, page 5.
Yes, basically on page 5, we look at grade span poverty rate because what our district's philosophy or approach has been over the years is to focus at the elementary level because that's where the gap is the smallest relative to student performance, and we figure if we put our resources in at that level that we will be able to realize greater gains at the elementary level and carry through. This poverty rate is based on the socioeconomic status of our families, and it's calculated that way.
Okay, and so the second part, as I read this, and Russell, please don't get mad, and as I averages, I come up with somewhere between one-third to 25% of our students are at the poverty rate. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we live here and we see this beautiful community, and one-third to 25% of our students are living at the poverty rate. And I think that that's just something we all need to keep in our minds all the time.
Mm-hmm. Right. And my recollection of this is that we have four elementary schools that are Title I elementary schools. One of four. Yeah,
six.
We have Hawthorne, Pacheco, CL five.
But we have six now that we
CL Smith, Del Mar, and now Monarch. Yes. So more than half of our elementary schools. Mm-hmm. Thank you for getting me there. And I believe Hawthorne is over 50%.
Yes.
Yeah. And Del Mar, I believe, was in the 40% range, mm-hmm. was it not?
42%, yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and that's really significant when we think about what we're doing here. So thank you, Mr. Buckman. Other comments from board members? Mrs. Roger?
I think we were all kind of on the same page, and when we read this document, the things that jumped out at us, I was surprised also at the number of children that living in poverty and the number of homeless children that we have identified. And I talked to Dr. Matakovich about it at some length. And it is, we are utilizing, when according to Dr. Matakovich, and correct me if I'm wrong, if we can identify homeless children or families in that type of need, then that's how we're using the Safe Sock coordinator, Melissa Musgrove, mm-hmm. that we, the position that we decided to add, I think it was last year, mm-hmm. it's fairly recently, that she is able to work with those families and put them in touch with the social agencies that can aid them. So I felt really good about adding that position, and particularly when I saw exactly the people that, you know, are being served by it. It is saddening that there are children in our schools, that there are children in our world that are homeless, and I'm glad that we are able to help them as best we can.
Yeah, I'd just like to say, and I appreciate you pointing that out, you know, we have a strong counseling unit as well as the family services coordinator, and it's really important to us that we identify these kids and coordinate the services in the community to support these families, and appreciate you bringing that up.
Okay, and we need this as an action item tonight, mm-hmm. so would someone like to make a motion on this?
Move approval of the 2007-2008 Consolidated Application for Funding Categorical Aid Programs.
Okay, it's been moved by Mr. Millar and seconded by Mr. Buckman.
Thank you.
All in favor? Aye. It carries 6-0.
Thank you.
Let's move on to item number 7, approval of contract renewals with contracted employees, Assistant Superintendent Business Services, Assistant Superintendent Educational Services, and Superintendent. Dr. Valentine.
Simply have completed negotiations for contracts for those three positions and bring them forward tonight for approval as we do with all other contracts.
Okay, yeah. Is this brought together as a group then? Or are these...
They're brought together as a group unless you wish to separate them.
Okay. Is there any board discussion on this item? Okay, is there anyone from the public who would like to address the board on this item? Mr. Peter, I'm sorry.
No.
Okay. Would someone like to make a motion?
I'm going to move to approve item number 7, approval of contract renewals with contracted employees, Assistant Superintendent Business Services, Assistant Superintendent Educational Services, and the Superintendent.
Okay, it's been moved by Mr. Peter and seconded by Mrs. Roger. All in favor?
Aye.
Carries 6-0. Let's move on to item number 8, water use at school sites in Los Osos. Mr. Parker.
Good evening. Following up on the board's interest in evaluating our water use at our school sites in Los Osos, we studied the opportunities that might present themselves for either water conservation or, as the item points out, alternative methods of using water in Los Osos. And we started off looking at the domestic water use, and I would like just to divide domestic versus irrigation and think 20% and 80%. Irrigation is by far the largest consumer of water at a school site. With over 300 plumbing fixtures that could be retrofitted to a lower flow or an automatic shutoff type fixture, we evaluated that would probably cost a minimum of $22,000 in parts alone and save approximately 360 units of water, a unit being one unit equaling 100 cubic feet of water per year, and estimated that that might save us about $13,000 or $1,300 a year, and would have about a 17-year payback. And it wasn't a real huge water-conserving move. We also looked at irrigation, and we divided it into the type of irrigation that we would consider less essential and more essential, that being planter area and decorative plantings versus turf area, which is used for physical education and student activity. A number of irrigation beautification planters are already off, and they're off because the plants are a Mediterranean-style plant. They thrive in the community with in our local climate with very little watering, and they've been established. Other decorative planters, if the water were turned off, would show the effects. Some plants would die, and certainly any grass planters in parking lots and things like that would not survive. But in looking at shutting off decorative planters, we estimate that we could save approximately 1,000 units of water a year, which would be about $3,650 a year in water savings at no cost if you don't factor in some point in time replanting some of those areas. And the philosophy about drought-tolerant plantings, you could argue that if a plant can't survive in this climate, then it perhaps isn't the right choice for this climate. And therefore, natural selection would rule them out, and we would plant with those plants that do survive. We also looked at some of the decorative lawns that are very integral to the classroom area, and in particular in Los Osos, those are the large interior lawns at Monarch Grove. They are large water consumers, but they are very much in the heart of the campus, and while they could be shut off, I think it would be problematic unless the spaces were redesigned for hardscape and drought-tolerant planting instead of large interior lawn areas. Those lawns in particular would save about another 1,000 cubic feet a year. And then we started to scratch our head a little bit and said, well, what are the possibilities of groundwater irrigation for the schools in Los Osos? And we have a long history of working with Cleith and Associates, who are probably the local experts in hydrogeological consulting, and indicated that the groundwater in the upper aquifer is very appropriate for irrigation use. It is very plentiful under at least three of the schools and probably Los Osos Middle School as well, although we would need to do some actual testing there. Could be used for irrigation of not only sports turf but also decorative planters, and would reduce the irrigation consumption that the community uses for their drinking water, which is the lower aquifer. So it would appear like it would be an opportunity that would be a win for the community as well as a win for the school district, in that we would estimate that we would save over $100,000 a year on our water costs if we were able to irrigate all four school sites in Los Osos with well water from the upper aquifer, and at the same time increase the community's water supply because we wouldn't be drawing that water, which is potable water that we irrigate with now, from the lower aquifer. It's not 100% savings because there is leakage between the upper aquifer and the lower aquifer, and it's between 25 and 35%, I think, leakage. So if we pulled out 3 acre feet of water, we would benefit between 1 and 1.5 acre feet of less consumption in the lower aquifer. So if I haven't thoroughly confused you, there were some exhibits attached. The one exhibit, the aerial of each school, attempts to indicate those areas of decorative planters that would be affected if we shut off if there was the board's desire to shut off the irrigation of those planters. And the last exhibit is a kind of interesting cross-sectional analysis of the aquifers in Los Osos, and that happens to be a cross-section that actually slices right through Los Osos Middle School, which is the area where we have the most uncertainty, although it's we think it likely that it would pan out for irrigation as well. And so I guess we're asking for guidance from the board how you'd like us to proceed. Would you like us to pursue irrigation wells and testing and then come back and report to you what the feasibility is and refine the budget estimate? Would you like us to take any steps regarding reducing irrigation or domestic water use in the interim period? Or would you have questions?
Brad, what things are residents of Los Osos Baywood being asked to do now because of their water situation?
You know, we have not been contacted by Los Osos. The school district has not been contacted by the Los Osos CSD to ask us to do anything. And I'm not exactly sure what the residents may have been asked to do at this point in time. But a level 3 water situation in Los Osos means that their water supply is under threat and there are no plans in place to turn it around. A level 2 would be a community's water supply is under threat and there are plans in place and implemented to turn it around. So it's not really a good position for the community to be. We are probably the largest water user in Los Osos.
Yeah, okay.
And as a result, if all 4 school sites were successful with their irrigation production, we would save approximately 56 acre feet of water that we would draw from the upper aquifer rather than drawing it from the lower aquifer. There is a typo on page 8.2. Mm-hmm. Los Osos Middle School is 13,358 units, not 3,358.
And then my other question is, why does the cost of water vary between 2 sets of schools there?
One is a private water company. The other is the used to be CSA 9, and now it's the Los Osos Community Service District. And I couldn't answer why that is.
And just is.
Is it a geographic boundary, though, I mean, that runs through the community?
Yes.
Okay.
And the CSD's water structure is an escalating water rate structure. And I've quoted an average cost since our water use is so much higher than 10 units a month of residential. Yeah. We're up at the upper end for all of our consumption.
And if we were to do the tightening up on the domestic usage side, and I assume there's no labor cost estimate in there estimate in our materials, because would our own folks try to absorb the workload? Or
we figure it's a good half a man year in order to do, I believe. It's pretty time consuming. We could absorb it over time. We wouldn't be able to affect a change that quickly. But would we save that much water
modest
for the effort.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Sure. Well, I, for one, would support moving forward with the study. Not only do I think it's the right thing to do environmentally, but if the data actually bears out what you are estimating here in the final analysis, it amounts to pretty significant money savings over time. So I think it's a good idea to move forward with it. In terms of the planter areas that you talked about, if we were to shut those off, what is planted in them now? I mean, are there drought-tolerant plants in them now?
There's a whole variety.
Okay.
It depends where you are. Some planters will have a mixture of drought-tolerant and non-drought-tolerant plantings in them. Some are all drought-tolerant. I doubt there are too many that are nothing. Any of the lawn areas are definitely not drought-tolerant.
Right, sure.
And will simply go brown. There are some slopes that, while we could curtail watering, we would also want to then watch it and irrigate on an as-needed basis, because we don't want to inflict an erosion problem on the district.
Right.
So it would be managed.
Well, I'm wondering if, with respect to the planter areas, if we should be considering a district-wide plan, not just one for Los Osos, I have neighbors. In fact, their home was featured in the weekly home section of the Tribune a few weeks ago, who planted their entire yard with drought-tolerant plants. They don't use a bit of water in the yard, and they have a gorgeous yard. It's all native species to the coast here. And I personally would love to see us move towards something like that across all of our campuses in planter areas.
And rest assured, we have been, and we have been doing it for 15, 20 years. It's just not... it's not complete and across the board. There are a number of legacy plantings that are still in place.
Right, sure. Good.
Mrs. Rogers?
Well, I'm the one who brought this up, and I am really glad that you did this work. I think that it's borne out that doing the wells will be beneficial for both the district and the community of Los Osos. And I would like to thank Carol Kumo for approaching me about this. She's a teacher in the district and also active in our community in Los Osos, and I thank her for bringing the issue to me so that I could bring it forward. I think that the planter areas is something that we could address at any point in time. We could cut back the irrigation. We could cut off the irrigation. We could do whatever we needed to do as we saw what was happening with the water situation out there. I think moving forward with the wells is the right thing to do now, and to tighten up the costs and then make a decision about whether to go forward, but certainly to do the test wells and whatever else it is we need to do so that we have the whole picture. Mr. Spadafore.
Yeah, thank you. I also want to compliment you, Brad, regarding the analysis, especially towards the end, and the potential savings. And I also think that the role the school district should take in Los Osos and Baywood Park is important, too, because we are the largest user. But the point that David was making, the point that Marilyn was making about changing the plants out to drought tolerant eventually, mm-hmm. I know that at the last meeting, Lionel Johnston had asked about planting, and they have trees and other materials that are being grown throughout the county.
Right.
I'm wondering if the district reached out to the community and said we have a plan to eventually, as much as possible, change most of our plantings to drought-tolerant plants because of the need to conserve in Los Osos, if in cooperation with the community we'd find more groups that are growing plant-tolerant plants throughout the area that even may be donating them or cooperating with other institutions mm-hmm. to do that.
And I have a couple of questions. We don't currently Los Osos doesn't currently draw from the upper aquifer because it has the higher nitrate level. Is that correct?
Many areas in the upper aquifer have the high nitrates. There are some potable water well draws from the upper aquifer in the community, and estimating that at about 15% of their total water supply.
Okay, and then the last question I have, when the sewer goes in the year 2075, is there a plan for water reuse? I know that there's a plan to re-inject the water back into the aquifers, but is there a plan for reuse as there is in San Luis Obispo at Laguna?
In talking with Pablo Ogren, who's the county director, he shared with me that they do not have a tertiary treatment plan. That is not what they are pursuing. And that's what you would need is tertiary treatment in order to be able to use it for irrigation purposes. He said that if there's any impetus to move towards a tertiary treatment plant, it would come from the water purveyors in the community.
Thank you. Mrs. Roger, did you want to make a motion? We could just direct Mr. Parker. I don't even know if we need to make a motion.
It's action discussion.
Would you be comfortable with just a direction, or do you want a motion?
Certainly, I'm happy with just direction.
Okay.
I understand,
Mr. Chair.
So I think it's the. Go ahead,
Mrs.
Roger.
Do you want to give direction?
No.
Well, I guess. But what we're doing, Brad, is we're directing you to. We're asking you if you would please pursue. The feasibility studies, let's see, and test wells.
Okay.
And bring back more concrete costs if you're able.
And I neglected to point out two things I just wanted to make clear, that we would be using restricted capital facilities funds, not general fund monies, monies like the monies we got from the sale of the Torrey Creek property or from our modernization savings. And also that if in the process of drilling our test wells in Los Osos, they test out, we'll go ahead and case them at that time in preparation for making them permanent wells, because the economies are there to do that.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay. So we do or do not need a motion? No. Okay. So we'll go forward, and then we look forward to hearing from you on that item. Thank you very much, Brad. All right. Let's move on then to the action consent agenda. Item number 9, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 10, approval of proposed salary increases for positions not represented by bargaining units. 11, acceptance of donations. 12, disposition of surplus property. 13, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 14, approval of purchase orders. 15, approval of summer field study trips. And 16, approval of San Luis High School agricultural vocational education incentive and specialized grant application. Okay, would somebody like to make a motion on that?
Yeah, I'll move approval of items 9, 10, 11, 12, 14, 15, and 16.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved by Mrs. Roger and seconded by Mr. Spadafore. Any other discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Carries 6-0. Mr. Spadafore.
Thank you. I wanted to ask Russell, the school bus that we're purchasing, what's the fuel type of that school bus?
I don't know. But I think it's a diesel.
So that fits with our fleet and is more fuel efficient than, I mean, are we choosing the best we can in terms of fuel efficiency? And
Go ahead and address the CNG issue.
The bus that we're proposing to purchase, it's an advanced diesel. It has the particulate trap and the low emissions. That's what we go with. While we run a fleet of 13 CNG buses, our cost per mile, if you subtract out the fact that we got them for free, our cost per mile for operation is higher than our diesel buses. The diesels get better fuel mileage than the CNG buses do.
I don't know what that means, CNG.
Compressed natural gas, I'm sorry.
I then make a motion to approve 13.
Okay. All right. It's been moved and seconded by Mr. Buckman. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Carries 6-0. Let's move on then to item number 19. Well, actually, we need to go to item number 18, which is advanced agenda items. We already have one, I believe, which is looking at the consolidated plan and the LEA. Anything else, Mr. Buckman?
I'm wondering if the board would be interested in possibly reexamining the suspension and expulsion consequences for students in an attempt to sort of level the playing field. It appears that what we have is sort of a two-tier situation right now. If you're a senior and you commit some expellable or suspended offense prior to a certain period, you're expelled, suspended, and that's it. But if you commit that same offense post April, you also lose your privilege to walk at graduation. And it turns out, I think, that this is a fairly strong deterrent for students to lose that ability to walk, and it makes the walk that much more desirable, something to go after. And I'd like to propose at least a discussion of that, and possibly other things that are going on with suspension and expulsions. And any questions I can answer.
Mr. Moore? Well, I'm not sure that I'd support it in that form. I think I would be more interested in seeing it as part of a comprehensive review of what we do about expulsions. And in fact, a couple of things have come up at recent expulsions regarding the nature of recommendations and the kind of some of the information we get. And maybe that would be an opportunity for us to take a look at our overall approach to it. I know a lot of it's is a creature of the Ed Code, but how we apply things and just the total the kind of information the board gets, and in fact, maybe we could sound out some of the steps that we do before we assign an advanced agenda item or a study session. We could do it in our board retreat and try to figure out what we want. But I think Mark's getting at some important issues, but I think we need to take a step back and look at a broader context when we consider those issues.
Mr. Spadafore?
I support what Mr. Millar added to what Mr. Buckman said, and then that would help with the bigger picture loss with along with the resource staff that we have in terms of information at the hearings that we had discussed before. So I support that.
Mr. Spadafore?
And then a couple of the items I wanted to do. Adrian, who's not here, had requested that we review as an item Administrative Regulation 6161.11. So I think we should honor that and have that go on the agenda. That's number one. That's the one on the classroom material.
Didn't we just do that?
It's already on the advanced agenda.
And then the other, I'm sorry.
Okay. Go ahead.
And then the other thing, two things. Mr. Bedrijan's comment about the information from Hawthorne. Our next school board meeting is actually the retreat evaluation on, I think it's July 5th, July 17th. So I'm wondering if the board is comfortable that we could get some information about what the results are in writing, and then we can discuss it at the appropriate time to see what format that could come forward.
I can't wait to find out what everybody's talking about.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I don't know what Mr. Bedrijan is referring to.
Okay, so I guess the idea would be that the board be given something ahead of time so we can review that and then begin a discussion to educate ourselves. And then the last thing, which is kind of much different than we've discussed in a while, and it brings up the interesting subject matter of parcel tax. We've been discussing over several meetings the fact that there's going to be flat revenue for several years. And what I would recommend that the board consider is an agenda item to review in a longer view or a longer term issue of what happens over the next 2 to 10 years if there is a flat income picture, and to consider alternatives, which I was involved with the Superintendent's Advisory Committee in early 2000, including a parcel tax, so we begin the discussion now rather than 4 years from now.
I would support that, and I believe that's part of our board goals, which is to look at ways of increasing our revenues. Okay. Anybody else? Because I've got a couple I'm interested in. I had a parent talk to me the other day about graduation requirements for foreign exchange students. And I would be interested in getting some more information on that. If we have graduation requirements for foreign exchange students, what it means for a foreign exchange student to walk or not walk, what it would mean for a foreign exchange student to wear a cap and gown, that kind of a thing. And I'd be satisfied with a Friday packet on that, but I did have a parent ask me about that, and so I'd be interested in some more information on that one.
The short answer is that the graduation requirements are the same as for any other student. The question of walking in a graduation ceremony is something that is discretionary.
Okay.
Chris?
Yes?
If I could just mention, one of the pieces of legislation that was chaptered this year did go towards... I can't get it now. Sorry. Lost it. I now get a discount at the movie theater.
So that's our first motion for the annual medical evaluation. Here we go.
Okay. Board member medical.
I just failed.
So when you say it's discretionary, and I'm not asking to engage in this discussion this evening.
Well, I'd quickly correct myself. It isn't discretionary. It is the same requirement as it is for any other student.
Okay, and so maybe that's part of the discussion we'll have on what causes a person to walk or not, I guess. I don't know. Mr. Buckman.
The brain burp is over. The piece of legislation that was chaptered was to look at for military, active military duty and the amount of transferring that they do around the United States, to develop a liaison at the state level and at district level so that there's a study of the requirements and an ability to work with those requirements. And I wonder if that would apply. It sounds like we've already got it covered, but if it would apply and if at the with foreign exchange students as well.
And then the second thing I'd like is I'd like an update on Teach School, and I'd like an update on the enrollments at Teach School. I'd like an update on the curriculum that's been changed at Teach School. And so if there's any other support for looking at that. Okay, so we have some support for that as well. And I would like that to be actually an agenda item. Okay, let's move on then to item number 19, which is report by board members and district administrators. And I know we were all busy, so who'd like Mr. Spatafor?
No, I want to use this time to thank Dr. Valentine. I think all the board members got a multiple letters and emails about a staffing issue out at Bishop's Peak, and I just wanted to recognize what Dr. Valentine did by meeting with the parents out at Bishop's Peak, some 25 or so, and answering questions, and I think that's the essence of administering in a district where parents have the right to ask questions, and an administrator will appear and help them understand or direct the issue. So I thought that was a great way to handle that.
To point out that I'm sure Dr. Valentine would have met with all those parents even if they hadn't inundated board members with emails and letters. But even though we do appreciate the input.
I don't want anybody to believe that he got a phone call at 3 in the morning saying, why am I getting these emails? No, that wasn't what happened. But, yeah, thank you.
And this is Roger.
Well, I know we've all been busy this past week with graduations. I attended the Pacific Beach graduation, the Morro Bay High School graduation, and the Senior Academic Awards at Morro Bay High School, all of which were wonderful experiences. My son is now a high school graduate. We got him through. I can see Mr. Bedrigian smiling out there. So I'm very happy. It's always fun to do the graduations, but particularly when your child is involved, you know, it's very special. And Pacific Beach's graduation is always personal and touching, and you really feel you champion those students who have struggled and had a harder time getting there than some others. So I thank Karen Lopez and her staff for putting on a lovely graduation for the kids. And that's really all I have to report.
Okay. And I know that, again, a lot of us were at Morro Bay High School. Mr. Peter was there as well as Mr. Spatafor, and I was able to attend that. Mr. Peter and I were both also able to attend the Senior Awards at Morro Bay High. And then I believe I get it right that Adrian, Mark, Walter, and Marilyn were also at the finale for Gary Lampicht as well as I. And that was quite a touching night as well. And I think that's it, unless I see any other red lights from board members. Shall we? Dr. Valentine, I apologize.
Just very briefly, I had the pleasure of attending all of the San Luis Coastal graduations, and that's always a treat. But I just wanted to add a couple of other special experiences. Number one, I had the opportunity to attend the County Office of Education Special Education completion ceremony along with Mr. Buckman and certainly Mr. Unger, who was there in multiple capacities. And also had the privilege of attending the Grizzly Challenge Charter School
graduation at the PAC. It was an absolutely full house, if you can picture the PAC from floor to ceiling, with relatives of students who had met that challenge and were moving on in very positive directions in their life. It was a moving experience, and I enjoyed it have enjoyed the privilege of being on their board as well.
Okay. Would anybody like to make a motion to adjourn?
I move we adjourn.
Mr. Peter moves we adjourn. And Mr. Buckman is seconding that. And we are adjourned.